Today's scripture reading comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 9 through 10. It can be found in your pew Bibles on page 944. Hear the word of the Lord. He said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with my weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story. My name is Madeline Murphy, and I'm a senior at Elizabeth Seton High School. It is extremely surreal to be standing up here, because what felt like a very, very short 4 years ago, I sat in the sanctuary for the first time. I watched as seniors shared how God and this church had shaped their lives. As a little freshman, I sat there and I was like, I can do that. I want to be able to stand up and tell this inspiring story about my life. Fast forward to senior year, and it turns out that actually writing a testimony is much harder than just imagining it. I spent a lot of time staring at a blank Google document, writing something just to delete it a few minutes later. I wanted to write this nice, neat story. There'd be an intro, something would happen, there'd be a transformational moment, and I'd be on the right path after that. Sadly, my story isn't neat. I think my testimony is more like a drive in DC. There are some unexpected potholes, unexplainable traffic, and the inexplicable ability to catch every red light, plus dealing with whatever the heck the Chenley Circle is. Like many people, my faith life started with my parents. I grew up in a Navy family, which meant that every 2.5 years, up until when I was 10, we would pick up and move to wherever Uncle Sam called. This meant I got to live all over, which was so amazing. But as a kid, I didn't have a home base or a home church. My dad was the constant for my faith formation when I was younger. I remember he served as a warden at the Episcopal church we went to in Italy. I was always helping, otherwise known as being underfoot. He would give me little tasks to feel important. As I got older, my dad would lead a family Bible study if we as a family couldn't make it to church that Sunday. And in whatever we were doing, he would find a way for me to feel involved in the faith life within and without a church setting. But I learned the most about what it means to be faithful the summer before my fifth grade year. This is a day I will never forget. My mom and my dad sat me down on the orange couch in our living room and told me that my dad had been diagnosed with cancer, lymphoma specifically. I was shocked, but my parents were so strong. They made sure that I knew that we were going to fight this disease as a family and keep a steadfast faith through all of it. If it won, it was going to be because we would have tried everything modern medicine had to offer. Well, over the next 3 years, we did just that. Chemotherapy, radiation, special diets, stem cell transplants, bone marrow transplants, along with the normal middle school braces and science fair projects. After the whirlwind of treatments and medical trials, my parents sat me on that orange couch again to tell me that my dad, 6'5", naval officer, graduated top of his class at the academy, funniest, most loving person I know, the rock of my faith, was not going to win the battle with cancer. I remember being so shocked, I just screamed. It was so unfair. When someone you love dies, you are forced to grapple with what life means and what it means to authentically believe in Jesus through all of the mountains and the valleys. I often thought about who I would be if my dad had survived cancer or had never gotten it to start with. I would probably cry less, but I don't know if I'd be as strong. Middle school would have been easier, but when is it ever not awkward? And if I hadn't lost my dad, I think I would have a very different relationship with my faith. If I hadn't gone through this immense loss, I wouldn't have had to face what it means to still have faith in the face of immense grief, doubt, fear, and anger. My dad left me a letter to read after he died, in which he told me his struggles, how he tried to overcome the what-ifs and the why-me's. He reassured me that even when he faced life's hardest blow of learning that he would be leaving me and my mom, he never lost faith in God's plan for him or for us. In that letter, he left me with so much good advice. Some of the most important and what I want to share with you today are what he called his affirmations for life in the fight, which are: 1, cultivate an authentic spiritual life. 2, treasure and invest in relationships. 3, seek meaning and purpose above all else. 4, slow down to appreciate the beauty all around us. 5, and my favorite, courage and humility in the face of adversity ultimately leads to personal growth. And 6, don't take yourself too seriously. These 6 pillars exemplify what my dad stood for, and they give me a blueprint of how I want to live. Fast forward to the end of middle school, and I'm starting high school. This will be my first time in a private school, and my first time with all-girls education. From what I remember, I was excited about the plaid skirts and blazers, and a little bit hesitant on the rest. But now I couldn't be more grateful for the teachers, staff, coaches, students, and experiences that I've had at Seton, and I'm very ready not to wear a kilt every day. Seton gave me incredible opportunities and community that will always be part of my identity. One of the things I really valued about my 4 years there was the bond I formed with teachers turned mentors. One in particular was a religion teacher whose class I never actually took, but was instrumental in me finding my passion. One day, during my sophomore year, she came into my engineering class and told me to stop by her room if I could. I was very confused. I only vaguely knew who she was, and I had no clue what she would want to talk to me about. Turns out there was an opportunity to go to a lobby day on Capitol Hill with other DC area Catholic schools. She thought I might be interested. At that moment in time, I was, to put it mildly, frustrated with politics. Felt like nothing was happening, so I decided to go on the lobby day. I vividly remember, after lobbying, standing in the atrium of the Hart Senate office building and being hit with this feeling of this is where change happens, and this is where I'm meant to be. I'm sure that's not what most people feel when dealing with the US Senate, but that lobby day had been centered around the idea of Christian social justice. So when I reflect on that moment in the Hart Senate atrium, I also believe it was God calling me to the scary world of politics so I could be a voice for the voiceless. This moment shaped the rest of my high school experience. As I went on to more lobby days, worked on a campaign, and just a few months ago, got the privilege to work in the Maryland General Assembly. At each step, I felt this feeling of belonging, the feeling that this is where I'm called to be at this time. I feel the same belonging as I take my next steps at Denison University in Granville, Ohio, as I continue my love for politics in an interdisciplinary major program called Philosophy, Politics, and Economics. It's a mouthful. Another important part of high school for me was this church, all that I've learned here and the people that I've met here. As some know, I do not live in this area. I am from University Park, Maryland, about 20 minutes away on a good traffic day. But this has always felt like a neighborhood church, because if I was to walk down my block, I would find Molly Moore and Sophie Wagner. They are two members of the church who graduated last year and provided me with not just countless rides to church and small group, but they were role models for me on how I wanted to live out my faith. I'm eternally grateful to both of them. I'm also extremely grateful for the trips that I've taken with this youth group. The first one was a week-long backpacking trip in the Laurel Highlands. The big takeaway I took from the trip was the verse, "Do not be afraid, stand firm, and see the deliverance the Lord will accomplish for you today. For the Lord will fight for you. All you need is to hold your peace." This became a mantra for me as an athlete, competing on the varsity swimming and rowing teams all through high school. I figured out that if I said the verse to the tempo of a rowing stroke, it would get me 250 meters. With swimming, it would get me through the last length of a 100-meter backstroke race. It was a reminder during races and when life got too overwhelming that I didn't have to summit the mountain by myself. The Lord will fight for me when I feel like I can fight no more. Another verse I credit to the experience I've had at this church and was the reading today is 2 Corinthians 12, 7-10, where Paul is pleading with God to remove what he calls a thorn in his side. The Lord tells Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." I was given this verse by Kristen in a time when I felt like I was not worthy of God because of a particular thorn in my side. It was exactly what I needed to hear at that moment. While I was writing this, I saw that I did not have unconditional faith. I often questioned whether God was even cared how my life would go if he had just left me to fend for myself. But in rereading, I saw that on many occasions, God has worked through the people in my life in order to guide me towards his path. When my dad was undergoing treatment, it could have been that friend that took a second to make me laugh. Or one of the many things my grandmother did for us, one of which being her kitchen sink ministries, which meant that while I was at school and my mom was taking my dad to various appointments, my grandmother would come and clean our kitchen sink. because that was the thing that she could do to make our lives a little bit easier. It showed me the power of little things done with great love. God put teachers who led me to my passion and youth pastors who knew just the right verse to give me in my life to give me an example of how to be a living testament to Christ's teaching. The girls' small group, current and alumni, was put in my life to give me a space to question my faith, but also sometimes just to laugh until I cry. Love you guys. My mom for being the strongest person I know. I know I'm far from the perfect daughter, but I honestly don't know what I would do without you. All of these people and more have given me a piece of what it means to follow Christ. As I go off to college in the real world, I am praying that God continues to send people to pick me up when I inevitably fall, and that God can allow me to pick others up when they need it. Thank you again, and have an amazing Mother's Day.
Hi, everyone, and good morning. I'm Alan Abbott, and I'm a senior at the Potomac School. However, next year, I'll be attending Tulane University in New Orleans. Now, some of you might be able to tell, I'm not the biggest fan of public speaking, so rather than give a traditional testimony, I decided to sing a piece of music. I chose this arrangement of Be Thou My Vision by Richard Walters, not only because the message is a strong one, but because, quite frankly, I like the song.
Heart of my own heart, one. Good morning, and happy Mother's Day. My name is Charlie Thompson, and I'm a senior at Woodrow Wilson High School in Washington, D.C. And next year, I will be attending Gettysburg College. Before I start, I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people who have put up with me all these years and have helped me along my journey. My parents for always being there for me and loving me unconditionally. And all my Sunday school teachers and everyone at this church who have supported me and made me feel at home. If you don't know me, chances are you know someone in my family. My grandparents, Gene and Nancy Thompson, my parents, David and Amy Thompson, or one of my four siblings, Hannah, Sarah, Benny, or Megan. Since I can remember, I've been attending church every Sunday with my family. When I was younger, I took pride in going to Sunday school every week, not missing a single Sunday, memorizing numerous Bible verses for class, and knowing all the questions in Bible trivia. I remember sitting in the sanctuary and hearing senior testimonies year after year, and longing to one day tell everyone how great my walk with God has been. But like all walks of faith, my journey has had its ups and downs, and hasn't always been what I hoped or envisioned it to be. When I was 12, I went to Camp Ligonier and had one of the best weeks of my life. There I began to understand what it meant to follow Jesus, and learned for the first time what Jesus had done for me. At Ligonier, I felt loved and cared for in a way I had never felt before. I asked my counselor, Scott, how can I keep feeling this even when I go back home? He told me that I needed to find a community that loved and cared for me like I was at camp. People who showed you the love of Christ, he said. While this was in some ways life-changing and wonderful to hear, I found it increasingly hard to find community at home and to share my faith with my friends and those who I felt closest to. I was afraid of being rejected or being the odd one out because of my faith or being labeled that Christian kid. It proved difficult for me to find friendship in which I felt safe to share freely and without shame, and I struggled with this all through middle school. When I eventually turned to those in my church community, I found the love and support that I longed for and needed in my life. This community showed me the love of Jesus in every way possible. The youth pastor at the time, McLean Stone, showed me what I was missing. My whole life I thought that I had to be perfect and follow all the rules, or else that love that I felt would go away. McLean showed me his brokenness and sin, and told me that the love of Jesus was unconditional, and it couldn't be taken away because of my sin. I was relieved and overjoyed that I had finally found the community that my Ligonier camp counselor had spoken of years before. Then, at the end of ninth grade, when McLean left, I felt as though the community I had found was falling apart. I couldn't understand why God would take away the best part of my life and leave me feeling vulnerable and alone. So that year, I began to look for happiness that I had lost in other areas of my life. I started to find my worth in being popular, having the best social life, and being approved and in the approval of others. I thought that if I could just fit in and focus on the themes that seemingly made me happy, I could fill the hole that I felt in my life. I distanced myself from church and my church community and searched for what can make me happy and found community in those that could give me what I wanted. Instead of filling my life with Jesus and the plan that he had for me, I focused solely on what would make me cooler, happier, and more content with myself. I found myself indulging in things that I knew were wrong, but I told myself it would make me feel better and happier, and make those around me accept me. In time, I realized that the things that I thought would make me happy and fill the hole that I felt actually made me feel more empty than I had ever felt before. I felt lost and alone, and like there was no place I could turn. I thought because I had rejected God and what he wanted for me, I couldn't turn back to him in my time of need. And I certainly couldn't turn to the very things that made me broken in the first place. I continued to attend church and put on a good face. But in my heart, I wanted nothing to do with it. Then, in the fall of 2017, I went on a fall retreat with Young Life. On the last night of the retreat, the speaker said something that I heard hundreds of times, that Jesus died for me. However, this time he told us that it was specifically for me. I began to think about Jesus when he was dying on the cross and what that really meant for me. Then they told us to go out and be alone with God. As I looked up at the clear night sky, I was overwhelmed with emotion and began to cry. I couldn't comprehend that through all my sin and brokenness, that the God of the universe still loved me and sent his son to die in my place. That the God that created all that I saw around me thought of me and loved me to the point of death. And that nothing that I could do could separate me from the love of God. Even though I'm still broken, I know that I can lean on God for support and that he is an ever-present help in my time of trouble. That the love and acceptance that I longed for was always there and I just needed to accept it into my life. I would like to leave you with my favorite verse from Jeremiah chapter 29, Verse 11. For I know the plans I had for you, declared the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope for the future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Thank you.